Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8. Dhruva Maharaj leaves home. Text 41. Dharmartha Kama Mokshakyam Ya Ichech Treya Atmana Ekam Hi Eva Hare Tatra Karana Pada Sevana Dharmartha Kama Mokshakyam Ya Ichchech Treya Atmana Ekam Hyeva Hares Tatra Karanam Pada Sevanam Dharmartha Kama Mokshakyam Ya Ichchech Treya Atmana Ekam Hyeva Hares Tatra Karanam Pada Sevanam Dharmartha Kama Mokshakyam Ya Ichchech Treya Atmana Ekam Hyeva Hares Tatra Karanam Pada Sevanam Dharma Artha Kama Moksha.
The Four Principles: Religiosity, Economic Development, Sense Gratification, and Liberation.
Akyam,
by the name.
Ya,
who? Ichchet, may desire. Shreya, the goal of life.
Atmana,
of the self.
Ekam,
Ekam hi
eva,
only the one.
Hare,
of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Tatra,
in that.
Karana,
the cause.
Padasevanam,
worshipping the lotus feet. Translation. Any person who desires the fruits of the four principles, religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and at the end, liberation, should engage himself in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For worship of his lotus feet yields the fulfillment of all of these. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In Bhagavad Gita it is said that only with the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead can the demigods offer benedictions. Therefore, whenever any sacrifice is offered to a demigod, the Supreme Lord in the form of Narayan Shila or Shalagram Shila is put forward to observe the sacrifice. Actually, the demigods cannot give any benediction without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. Narada Muni, therefore, advised that even for religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, or liberation, one should approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, offer prayers, and ask for the fulfillment of one's desire at the lotus feet of the Lord. That is real intelligence. An intelligent person never goes to demigods to pray for anything. He goes directly to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the cause of all benediction. As Lord Krishna has said in Bhagavad Gita, performance of ritualistic ceremonies is not actually religion. The real path of religion is to surrender at the lotus feet of the Lord. For one who has actually surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord, there is no question of any separate endeavor for economic development. A devotee engaged in service to the Lord is not disappointed in the satisfaction of his senses. If he wants to satisfy his senses, Krishna fulfills that desire. As far as liberation is concerned, any devotee fully engaged in the service of the Lord is already liberated. Therefore, there is no separate necessity for his liberation. Narada Muni therefore advised Dhruva Maharaj to take shelter of Vasudeva, Lord Krishna, and engage himself in the way that his mother had advised, for that would help him fulfill his desire. In this verse, Narada Muni has especially stressed the devotional service of the Lord as the only way. In other words, even if one is full of material desires, he can continue his devotional service to the Lord, and all his desires will be fulfilled. Translation: any person who desires the fruits of the four principles, religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and at the end, liberation, should engage himself in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For worship of his lotus feet yields the fulfillment of all of these. Amayana tamrandasya, gyananjana shalakaya, chakshramanatumyena tasmai, Sri Gurudevena maha, Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stafitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam Vanchikalpa Charubhyas Cha Kripa Sindhu Vyeva Cha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare So here Prabhupada begins by talking about demigod worship. People are prone to think, people more or less always think, that the demigods are independent suppliers. So if we approach them for the supply of whatever we may be hankering after, then simply by approaching them, we are actually taking part in a complete process. It's complete, it's proper, and it's sufficient that if one is simply carrying out that demigod worship, then one can feel satisfied that I'm doing the correct thing, that this is right, and there is no fault in it. This is the way people think. Even if people, like in the African, or not just African, but many traditional types of religion, they worship the ancestors. And they think that the ancestors may supply. Isn't it? Is that right, Duzo? They think the ancestors will supply. So in this way, they think that by doing that sort of worship, we're also taking part in a complete process. That by doing that, we're doing something correct, and there's no fault in it. So, Prabhupada is explaining here, this is a mistaken conception. We may be taking our supply from the demigods. We may be taking our supply from the ancestors. We may be taking our supply simply directly from material nature by just gross materialistic exploitative activities. But wherever we're taking our supply from, and who is the intermediary, who is like the immediate source of supply, and perhaps apparently the actual source of supply, we should understand that this is this person or whatever material nature, whatever supplying, this is not really the supplier. This is more just like an agent. And when you're dealing with an agent, you have to understand this is just an agent. And the actual supplier, the person who's really responsible for the supply, and the person to whom I am responsible in order to carry out the reciprocation, to pay back the debt for the supply or to reciprocate for the supply, that is the actual, that is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the person who has to be acknowledged. So in different ways, depending on their tradition or their understanding of life, people are thinking that they are being supplied by certain persons or from certain sources, and they have some responsibility to them perhaps, but not actually the Supreme Lord. Shishinatai Gora Hare Ki. They have revealed themselves to show us that they are the sources of supply. So they are the sources of supply. So even amongst the materialists, at least some of them, they think that we are taking so much from the environment, so we should do something for the environment, isn't it? You see these advertisements that, you know, Mobil or somebody is doing something for the environment, and isn't that nice? So of course, it's not. It's better than just simply exploiting and leaving it at that. At least they're recognizing that the environment is supplying. So we have a responsibility to the environment. But it's not simply that the environment is supplying. The environment is the property of the Supreme Lord. It's the energy of the Supreme Lord. Petroleum and whatever it may be. These are all different forms of energy. And Prabhupada made the point, wherever there is energy, that means there must be an energetic. And if one is thinking that energy is existing without the energetic, this is very foolish idea. On our level, we have experience that the operation of any major, any concern, some business concern, it's not just some energy is running, but there are people there. And ultimately there is a person who is the head. And actually he is the one who's motivating everything. So it's not simply that the material nature or the material energy is supplying, and that if we acknowledge that we have to repay some debt to the material nature or material energy, that we have actually fulfilled our obligation. No. Or the demigods. Prabhupada compared the demigods to lesser government officials, the type of person one finds on the public desk in the government office, where you go to apply for your visa, or you do this or that, or make some application, you pay your tax, or you, whatever it may be. So you're paying to a government official. So, if that government official who's accepting your taxes says that actually, I can cut your taxes in half if you just give me half of that half, so you'll only be paying three quarters, and it'll be very nice. But then if you think, oh, this is a proper arrangement, then no, it's not. This is called bribery. Those of you who have been to India would know that without bribery, the whole country would have ceased to exist generations ago, actually. Yes. Hardly anything is possible without bribery. So that means that that person who is that supposedly the representative of the government, he's placing himself in the position of independent controller. That if you don't satisfy me independently, in my own right, in my own position, then you won't get the facility. And if you think that this is the process, that actually this person is the man who is actually accepting the taxes are his, so he can make some special arrangement to reduce my taxes, then this is corruption on your part. So this is actually what demigod worship is. Of course, it's better than simply being a gross exploiter. At least they're recognizing some authority that they have some responsibility to someone involved in the process of supplying them. But it's not a fact that that person is the ultimate independent supplier and that there's no need to recognize some other supplier. In the Vedic system, there's karma kandya, which means basically demigod worship and similar things, but more often than not demigod worship. And the idea is in the Vedic system that one, if one performs demigod worship properly, one may gradually be elevated. And then eventually one may come to the point of understanding Krishna is the supreme God, so my responsibility is with him. So actually it's meant to be a process for gradual elevation. But if one thinks that to simply worship a demigod or some demigods or the ancestors, because that's also there in the Vedic scriptures, that this is an end, these are ends in themselves, then one won't be successful. The example is given of a rocket going up, that if you go up, but if you stop going up, you automatically start coming down. You can't just stay on one level. So the Vedic system is for gradual elevation. But if at some point you stop elevating, then you'll start falling down. So in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains this, that even though the process of demigod worship or ancestor worship is there for the elevation of the conditioned souls, if a person thinks that these things are the end and the all in all, then they'll fall down. If they don't carry on going up and come to Krishna consciousness, if they just stop there, they'll fall down. So, it's not that you can just find some very convenient material position through the Vedic system and think, I don't need to go any further. So Krishna explains this in Bhagavad Gita, Aham hi sarva yajnanam, bhokta cha prabhur eva cha. Then how does it go after that? Anyway, I forget. But he says that, Aham hi sarva yajnanam, bhokta cha prabhur eva cha, that I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices. And I am the master of all sacrifices. What is it? Na tu mam abhijanati tatve natas chavanti chitte, something like that. Anyone who doesn't recognize my supreme position falls down. Then in the verse before that he says that those who are worshipping the demigods are actually worshipping me, but they're doing so in a wrong way. Therefore they'll fall down unless they elevate themselves and come to the platform of Krishna consciousness. So in Bhagavad Gita, as Prabhupada mentions here, Lord Krishna is explaining that this ritualistic process of demigod worship is not actually religion. It's not actually a complete or perfect process, just a step on the way for some people. But actually, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the proprietor. Krishna says, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam. I'm the enjoyer of all austerities and all sacrifices. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. And I am the Lord of all the planets. And that naturally includes their inhabitants, including the demigods. And it's me, Suridam Sarvabhutana. I am actually the one who can help anyone. I'm the only one who can help anyone. I'm the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities. And anyone who understands this point, how does it go? Anyway, Shantam Richati, basically. Yeah, Suridam Sarvabhutana. Gyatva Mam Shantam Richati. Anyone who knows me like this achieves peace. But if one doesn't recognize Krishna like this, one won't achieve peace. Even if one is a big demigod worshipper, worshipper of the ancestors, or exploiting material nature but trying to reciprocate a little with material nature, or whatever one's position is. Krishna explains, those who don't come to the point of recognizing my supreme position, they fall down. They'll eventually fall down. So, what is the process? So the idea is that whatever your position is, the process is to worship Krishna. It doesn't matter what your process is, or what your position is, what your outlook on life is. If your outlook on life is dharma, I must perform religion, then your process is devotional service. If your idea in life is artha, let me make economic development, then the process is worship Krishna. If your idea is, let me enjoy sense gratification, calm, what is your process? You must worship Krishna. And if your outlook, if your idea of life is, I must achieve moksha, liberation, then what is your process? You must worship Krishna. So we've mentioned already the last few days the verse from, I think, the second canto. Anyway, earlier on in the Bhagavatam. Akama sava kamava moksha kama udarati tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushampara. Whether you are akama, no desire at all, or sarva kama, you have every desire. And of course, Dhruva Maharaj is in that position. Every desire, he just wants everything, the whole universe and more. So that means everything. So he's sarva kama. Or if you're moksha kama, if you're desiring liberation, then tivrena bhakti yogena. Bhakti yogena means by bhakti yoga, by that process, bhakti yogena. So by bhakti yoga, yajeta purusham param, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you can achieve whatever it may be that you are wishing to achieve. But then again, we shouldn't think that we have now discovered the ideal way to gratify our senses or whatever material desire or non-Krishna conscious desire we may have. Now we've found the way to satisfy it. We don't worship the demigods. We don't worship the ancestors or things like this. We worship Krishna. And now we're going to really enjoy. No. It's not that Krishna is simply waiting to fulfill our material desires and that he will be satisfied with that. No. Krishna, when he sees someone is approaching him for any reason, Dhruva Maharaj, for example, or anyone, any of us, we're approaching Krishna, at least, and we may have some ulterior motives. Some different devotees have different ulterior motives. But anyway, we may have some ulterior motives. Have a roof over our head, nice food to eat, nice association, husband, wife, money, whatever it may be, fame, a motor car. So we may have certain ulterior motives, at least lingering. Not that they're necessarily like the most prominent parts of our consciousness, but they may be lingering there, these little ideas that maybe this, maybe that. So when Krishna sees that we're approaching him for any reason, akama, sarva kama, moksha kama, dharma artha kama, moksha, whatever, whatever our perspective is on things. So what does Krishna think? He doesn't think, oh yes, I'm going to give him lots of sense gratification, lots of money, impersonal liberation, name and fame, or whatever it is. He thinks, I'm going to get this person to surrender to me, sooner or later, somehow or other. So this is the attitude of Krishna. Very nice attitude. Somehow or other, even though this person is thinking that something else, other than my pure devotional service, is nice, but I will show them that it's not nice. And I will show them that devotional service is nice. So in this way, the person will come around. In fact, if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll see there, in one of the earlier chapters, Lord Krishna is talking to himself, having just departed from the planet 5,000 years ago and returned to Goloka. He's saying to himself that I have just been there, here, and I was trying to give people devotional service. But I saw that very few people really take to devotional service. And actually, I even saw that some of my devotees, some of those people who are trying to be devotees, that they're actually maintaining material desires. And they're thinking that these material desires, or non-Krishna conscious desires, they're thinking that these are like nectar. That if I can get this, whatever it may be, money, car, husband, wife, comfortable room, better clothes, or whatever it may be, then it'll be very nice. And Krishna's going to help me. So very good. Good for Krishna. Therefore I'll do a little service. So, Krishna's thinking to himself. And he's thinking, they think that these things are nectar. But actually they don't know. They're poison. They're simply poison. And they don't realize, but they're actually undermining the very process which they want to be successful in, the process of devotional service, by maintaining these desires. So what shall I do? Krishna says to himself, very interesting. He says, but I am very intelligent. I will show them that this thing, which they're thinking is nectar, but which is poison, I will show them that it is poison. And I will show them that actually devotional service is really the thing which is worthwhile. Then they'll give up their mundane desire and surrender more fully. So we should know that Krishna is watching. Krishna's watching everyone, and he's particularly watching the devotees, the aspiring devotees, those who are trying to become properly situated in devotional service. And Krishna knows whatever little desire you are hiding that the temple president doesn't know about, or even your best friend may not know about, he knows. And he is concerned. And his idea is, I'm going to do something about this. And he will. That we can have that much faith in Krishna, and we will see that we try to hang on to material desires. Krishna, we get hit on the head. Ow. That hurt. And then we realize, oh, it was the material desire, wasn't it? Therefore, I got hurt. So let me just give up the material desire, because material desires hurt. So in this way, we're thinking, oh, it's nectar, but it's poison. It hurts. So Krishna says earlier on in Bhagavad Gita that intelligent people don't take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. Yes. So people are thinking, oh, sense gratification, very nice. But Krishna is saying that intelligent people don't take part in the sources of misery which are sense gratification. Because such pleasures have a beginning and an end. Therefore the wise person doesn't delight in them. That doesn't mean that the wise person does not delight in anything. The wise person is just on a neutral level. Nothing negative, nothing positive. But the wise person, the devotee, is actually enjoying eternal pleasure. Never-ending pleasure. Never-ending. If it ends, it's material. Or if it's spiritual and it ends, it means that you became material. You came down from the spirit. And ever increasing. Actually, even material pleasure on the level of goodness is long-lasting. Krishna in Bhagavad Gita talks about pleasure in the different modes. Pleasure in goodness means at first it doesn't seem so nice, but then after a while you realize actually it is nice, and there's a much more lasting sense of pleasure. Like, for example, to become vegetarian. People may think, oh, it's not very nice. At first it may be a struggle. But after a while they realize, oh, it's actually very nice. and then they find an experience of pleasure from that, which is longer lasting. Pleasure in the mode of passion is very nice at the beginning, or very stimulating, at least very exciting. And you think, oh, very good, immediate pleasure. But then, before long, the pleasure is gone, and some suffering is there. And pleasure in the mode of ignorance, what is pleasure in the mode of ignorance? It's suffering from beginning to end. And the only pleasure which is there is the thought in the mind that this is going to be enjoyable. But actually the experience is suffering from beginning to end. So anyway, as devotees, we actually want to be even above the platform of goodness. Because even though material pleasure and goodness is longer lasting and of a higher quality, but still it's not transcendental, still it comes to an end, and it entangles one materially. So therefore, we should try and learn as soon as possible, because the alternative is that we may have to undergo some difficulty until we realize. So as soon as possible, we should try and realize that there is no point in being attached to anything material, thinking that it's going to be, that there's something in it of some value and it'll help me and it'll give me some happiness, ultimately. There's no point. Because any attachment, material attachment, ultimately will lead to material entanglement and lead to suffering. So, Lord Krishna then, his plan is to bring us to that point. And how does he bring us to that point? Well, one way, the first way is through knowledge. You can hear that material life is like this and spiritual life is like that. So spiritual life is better. Let me just stick with spiritual life. So you can learn by hearing. Then the next level is, if you can't learn by hearing, then you learn by experience. This they call sometimes the school of hard knocks. That after making the same mistake enough times and suffering, then eventually you'll get the idea, oh yes, this is causing me suffering. Perhaps I shouldn't do it. Oh yes, it sinks in. So that much intelligence one needs, at least to be a devotee. If one hasn't got that much intelligence, that one is not learning from hearing, one is not learning through experiencing, in other words, one is simply not learning, but one is maintaining the attachment and thinking that actually, yes, it will help me, despite the fact that difficulty is there, then the devotee will fall down, actually. Then the devotee will fall down. Sooner or later, due to the weight of that material attachment. So one way or another, somehow or other, we have to come to this point, sooner or later, preferably sooner, of learning that any material pleasure, any material attachment, is not worth it. The only thing which is worth it is pure devotional service. And that is really worth it. That is something most exalted and most unique, most wonderful. The most wonderful. So let me just stick with that and not get deviated. So this is necessary. This is necessary. Sooner or later, the devotee will come to that crossroads. Do I really want to maintain this material attachment and endanger my Krishna consciousness very seriously? Or am I actually ready to give up my material attachments? So we may think, oh, this is very hard. It would be a lot easier if I could just maintain my material attachments a little bit and be engaged in devotional service. But Krishna doesn't really allow it like that. Of course, for those who are really neophyte or pre-neophyte, like Dhruva Maharaj, he is pre-neophyte. So therefore the idea is, let him maintain his material attachment and just do some devotional service, and he'll become purified. That's the idea. But when one actually takes up the process, it doesn't exactly work like that. Krishna may not allow that. that you just maintain your material desire. No, Krishna is trying to burn away your material desires, and he wants to see that you're responding and reciprocating. So, anyway, as a general rule, people shouldn't worship the demigods. They shouldn't worship the ancestors. They shouldn't just exploit material nature and try and reciprocate a bit with it. Do a little ecological sort of cleaning up after themselves or something. They should simply take to the process of devotional service, and then they'll gradually become purified. Actually, they'll get everything that they would have got anyway, but then gradually they'll become purified, and gradually they'll come to realize, I don't really need all those things that I thought were very important and which I was worshipping the Lord for. No, I don't need them, so let me just stick at his lotus feet. So this is very nice. Any comments or questions? Did we shock anyone? Is it?
Maharaj, in some places we find that Dhruva Maharaj is blaming the demigods, says that the demigods, they caused him to desire something which is material.
Yes. We talked about that the other day. Yeah. He was in Maya. You know, when you want so, you have such big material desires, that's called being in Maya. It wasn't the demigod's fault. It was his fault. He's saying, the demigods put me in Maya. They gave me, you know, they made me be born as the son of a king, and therefore I think I'm such a big shot. They put me in that position, so it's their fault that I'm thinking like this. You know, if I'd been born as a sudra, I wouldn't have these big desires which are disturbing me so much. So it's their fault. So yes, Dhruva Maharaj is not a pure devotee. At this point, he's in Maya. But there's one thing, that is that he has the idea that my material desires will be fulfilled by worshipping the Supreme Lord. So Narada Muni is very cleverly engaging him to bring that out and minimize the material desires in the course of time. But yes, Dhruva Maharaj is in Maya.
Maharaj, can explain the statement of Prabhupada that we should hate to steal, not to sin?
Well, you know, with innocent people, people are innocent. They tend to have bad habits. Generally, they'll be meat eaters. Perhaps generally, they'll be taking intoxicants to some extent. Generally, they'll be engaging in illicit sex life. And generally, their lifestyle is not very good at all, actually. But they are somewhat, they're innocent. They have no, fixed idea that about God, particularly in a negative sense. So when you come along and present Krishna consciousness, then because they don't have a fixed idea like that, then they may say, oh yes, okay. So they're innocent. You know, they're quite open to these ideas. So in those cases, then, you know, like Prabhupada, we mentioned the other day when he was staying with those people in Butler, Pennsylvania, they were innocent people. They weren't envious, atheistic. They weren't devotees. They were just innocent. So Prabhupada saw them. He knew they were cooking meat. And you remember the story at all? He walked in early one day, she was still cooking meat, and she said, oh, I'm very sorry. He said, no, don't worry about it. Don't think about it. So, devotees like that, with the innocent people, that he overlooks all the nonsense. There's so much nonsense, but he overlooks. He just tries to draw out the Krishna consciousness. Because he knows that if I can do that, then all the nonsense will fall away. So I don't need to make big issues about the person's nonsense. But now if a person is a demon, atheistic, anti-God, and they'll also be very much into, you know, the usual material sense gratifications. So then the devotee may not, will not have that such a flexible attitude. There the devotee will take exception to their demoniac attitude, and will not feel that we can overlook the sin. No, the devotee will think, no, this person is too contaminated, so I won't deal with this person. So the devotee ignores those people. So that's the idea. With the innocent people, we certainly hate the sin, but not the sinner. We try and help them. For those who are demoniac, we recognize that demoniac means exceptionally sinful, actually. So there we take exception to the sinfulness, and we don't deal with the sinner. Get the idea? Some other comments or questions? Srila Prabhupada Kedai.